For this and all Clinical Updates podcasts, a 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit will be available for a limited time. To claim credit, view the slide deck associated with this podcast and complete the evaluation found in the slides. Speakers, planners, and CME staff do not have any relevant financial relationships with ineligible companies to disclose.
Welcome to Clinical Podcast. Today we have Dr. Scott Abrams, and we are going to be speaking or talking about buprenorphine for chronic pain. Hello, Scott, and thank you for joining me.
Of course, thanks.
All right, let's get right into it. First off, remind me what you do in the context of pain, addiction, and where do you work?
Yeah, how did I get here? So I'm board certified in addiction medicine, and really the impetus for that came out of my own experience and personal addiction with opioids. I won't tell that story, but basically it brought me to the point where I wanted to work in addiction medicine, which inevitably led to chronic pain, buprenorphine, and working with those that are opioid dependent and those that have opioid use disorders. So part of my job is to manage the controlled substance care program for the entire organization. And so, you know, if you've probably seen me around at different meetings where we're talking about benzodiazepines and opioids and kind of how we can help monitor those things. And so part of my job is to help manage these medications. And then I inevitably get a lot of referrals for chronic pain patients on opioids, on benzodiazepines, which means I prescribe buprenorphine a lot. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Great. Where do you work physically?
So I have an office in Wilmer. We have the Controlled Substance Care Team Department. That's basically confusing language for Addiction Medicine Department in Wilmer. Then I work at the Coordinated Care Clinic in St. Cloud, which is on the first floor of the same building that Addiction Medicine is in the Midsota building in St. Cloud.
Okay, so there are two addiction physical buildings, one in Wilmer and one in St. Cloud.
Right, exactly, yep.
Who else works with you? What's your teammate?
In Wilmer, I work with Holly Morales. She's a mid-level that does a great job at seeing these patients. And then in St. Cloud, I work in the coordinated care department. We have several mid-level providers that work there that also see these patients. And then upstairs, Kurt Devine runs the addiction medicine clinic, technically separate from my clinic, but they do a great job. And they see a lot of these same patients too.
Okay. And do you work with the chronic pain management clinic as just to make everybody aware in
So my clinic is technically not the chronic pain clinic.
No.
I'm not a pain clinic provider. I just end up seeing a lot of these patients because they end up having opioid use disorders or opioid dependency.
Perfect. Because in June we made a presentation in Science of Medicine with Dr. Cole about chronic pain.
Yeah, it's complicating. And you've got options, and we'll talk about who you might refer to me and who you might send to the chronic pain clinic.
So for context, I wanted, I don't need to get into what a big deal opioid use disorder and addiction is.
No.
But something that I came across that was interesting is there was a guideline from the VA system, I think it's published in Annals of Internal Medicine, that recommends buprenorphine as the number one go-to opioid for chronic pain when you're going to choose an opioid. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And we'll talk about why that's the case.
Is this like a game changer kind of thing? And when did we start looking at it this way?
Yeah, I think so. It's a slow evolution. I think we started using buprenorphine for opioid use disorder patients, you know, those who are addicted to opioids, recognizing that it's an opioid and it's a great pain for chronic, great medication for chronic pain. And then it has all these benefits that make it lower risk. And so we'll just jump into that. It's a partial agonist, the mu receptor, which just basically means the bottom line is it has less respiratory depression, less euphoria. It's longer acting. So you get this steady state. You don't get this up and down you get with short acting pain medications. You don't develop the tolerance usually that you see with opioids, and you don't see the opioid-induced hyperalgesia. So we've all had those patients that are fine on a certain dose of opioid, but then a year later they need more and more and more and more and more. And so that's tolerance, and that's opioid-induced hyperalgesia. And buprenorphine doesn't seem to have those near as much, and doesn't seem to have respiratory depression. So you got this potent opioid, it controls pain well, it's long-acting, and you don't see the tolerance and the need for more and more and more. Now, it's still you're still physically dependent on it, so don't be deceived by that. It's still definitely a physical dependence.
How? One of the big things with opioids is the euphoria.
Yeah, so certainly, you know, if you and I took Suboxone right now or buprenorphine, we would get we would get some euphoria because we're opioid naive.
Okay.
Part of what happens is that after about 4 days of being on buprenorphine with a half-life of like 27 hours, you get the steady state. Mm-hmm. And so there's not this up and down. And it's the up and down that causes the euphoria mostly. And so there's not near as much euphoria, but you do get the mu receptor activation, or at least partial activation, that causes the pain control. And so ideally, you get pain control without the euphoria, without as much constipation, and without the respiratory depression.
So how can you get addicted? I mean, in plain terms, what does the patient feel that is addicted?
Yeah, so it's really good at pushing that opioid receptor. And of course, those opioid receptors do downregulate some, so you become physically dependent on it. So if you go off it, it's not as severe as fentanyl or as oxycodone withdrawal as a full agonist, but it's much longer lasting mm-hmm. because it's such a long lasting medication. So it's certainly a significant withdrawal that should be managed medically.
Beyond the withdrawal, does a patient feel something other than pain control that is addictive?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that really gets into, does the patient have an opioid use disorder or they just have physical dependency? And for a lot of these patients, the answer is yes. There will be cravings there. Is that just all dependency? That's really hard to sort out. But certainly physical dependency when the patient goes off. And then once the physical withdrawal is gone, are there cravings afterwards? That probably indicates an opioid use disorder. Certainly days or weeks of withdrawal symptoms if you don't manage it appropriately. But it can be managed really well, and then you don't have to suffer when you go off it.
To be clear, in kind of at the basics of it, the main addictive aspect is that if you try to get off it, then you withdraw, so you feel the need to go back to it.
And yeah, exactly. And when a patient does get off it, I mean, the withdrawal symptoms can be managed really well. We just do a slow taper, and it's very reasonable to get off it. It just takes time.
So it begs the question, why use any other opioid for somebody who's opioid naive?
That's a great question. I think it's complicated. It's a medication that not many providers are comfortable with. Number one, it's sublingual only, so you can't take it as a pill. There's a couple of different formulations. There's microgram dosing and milligram dosing. Mm-hmm. So the dosing is a little bit nuanced, and we'll get into that, who would get what dose. And then I think the high affinity of buprenorphine for the receptor, you can cause significant withdrawal symptoms in somebody who's on oxycodone or on fentanyl. And so there's some fear of starting it that you might put that patient in precipitated withdrawal. It's called is a pretty horrific withdrawal. You know, if I'm taking fentanyl and all of a sudden I give myself a dose of buprenorphine, that buprenorphine would knock the fentanyl off all the opioid receptors, and I would go into a horrific withdrawal. And so, okay. I think the conversion is scary. That's scary for patients, and so a lot of times the job is hand holding, just walking through it. And then it's just not a medication that a lot of physicians have experience with.
But let's merge slowly into who the right patient is for,
yeah,
because
yeah.
let's say for a second that we all get really well educated on how to dose it, what it is, and you have an opioid naive patient who has chronic pain, without getting into why you have chronic pain and all that. Why would you consider something else other than this?
Sure. Yeah. And admittedly, I don't have a ton of experience with opioid naive patients that get here,
okay.
but I can talk you through it. Basically, the opioid naive patient that has chronic pain just doesn't come to see me, because I deal with the patients that are
sure.
problem patients. I get all the problem patients. And so, but the opioid naive patient is that patient that for whatever reason has had chronic pain, and you think they're going to need opioids, you know, for long term. This is not a short term medication, by the way. This is
so
not
number one, no, for sure.
Yeah. This is not, I sprained my ankle or I have an acute back strain. This is that patient that has some reason to have chronic pain, and they are going to have chronic pain and probably 4 years, and they maybe never get off an opioid. So that's the kind of patient you're thinking about. In the opioid naive patient, you're going to start with microgram dosing. This is Belbuca or Butrans, the patch. This is microgram dosing. And so this is, you know, 300, 900 milligram, 900 micrograms twice a day. So microgram dosing, small dosing.
Okay.
And that's very different than we use in patients who are, you know, on more than 50 MMEs, or those patients with opioid use disorder using fentanyl on the street, completely different dosing. And so that's important. That's important to know. And this is part of why it scares people away. It's like, I don't know all this. I don't want to do this.
Okay. So if you mix up the dose, it's a huge deal.
It's a big deal. Yeah.
So we were talking about this patient who's opioid naive. You think they're going to need opioids for a while, and you're going to start with this microgram dosing of buprenorphine. Why wouldn't you choose that instead of morphine or any other opioid? It sounds like much better deal. Is there any reason to use any other opioid?
No, buprenorphine is really going to be the go-to medication in the future, I think, for long. If you have a patient that you're going to be putting on long-term opioids, buprenorphine is by far far less risk of respiratory depression. and other kind of nasty side effects. And so
over a few years, it could be a game changer on the opioid crisis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Right. Absolutely.
And that will go along with those, the guidelines that I came across for the VA system. Okay. So we start with these patients with microgram dosing. And then what do we do? How do we follow these patients? How do we adjust dosing? What tends to happen? We are talking about straightforward opioid naive patients that we study.
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, all the CDC guidelines for chronic opioid prescribing still apply. And so the rules are not out the window. I mean, it's the same rules. So you follow them closely. You know, you monitor their symptom control. Are they gaining, you know, function? Are they getting better? Dose adjustments are every 4 days at minimum because it takes so long for the half-life of buprenorphine to build up. And so you start the patient at a low dose, you know, 300 micrograms twice a day, and then you slowly increase, but not sooner than every 4 days, because it takes 4 days to, you know, to get up to plasma levels. And so, but then you follow them once they're steady, you follow them every 3 months, just like you would, doing urine drug screens, you know, drug monitoring program or controlled substance care agreements, and then reviewing the prescription monitoring program. And so all the rules still apply for chronic opioids that apply with buprenorphine.
Now, before we get into the challenging patients, that those are your patients and they are not as rewarding and straightforward for the primary anymore. Are you aware of any data with these few years in which we started using that is showing an improvement in the numbers of addiction and certainly deaths from respiratory depression with opioids?
I think it's pretty clear that it's been shown. I think one of the most interesting recent things I saw is actually improved pain control over full agonist, which is always a concern. Patients think they're getting less pain control, but improved pain control and certainly absolutely with less respiratory depression and less significant side effects.
Okay. So what patient is a candidate along the lines for you, and what patients should be referred to you for buprenorphine?
Yeah. So who do I see in my clinic?
Yes.
So these are the patients in the primary care clinic. These are challenging patients. So if you think of this patient, like this name comes up and you go, oh, that's a tough one. Mm-hmm. And every time their refill comes up, you kind of go, you know, and you probably inherited them. You probably inherited them on, you know, 150 MMEs. You know, they're probably on, you know, a short acting oxycodone, a long acting oxycodone, and then maybe they're on a benzo and maybe a Z drug, Ambien, you know, to throw in there. These are tough patients. Maybe they have an opioid use disorder and you don't really know. And maybe they have chronic pain. It probably doesn't really matter. They probably have chronic pain and an opioid use disorder, but they certainly have opioid dependency, okay. and they are at risk for complications, right? They have COPD.
Now, can I?
Go ahead.
No, I wanted to pause you there for a second because I read something that I wasn't aware of. I want to make sure everybody's aware. If I understand correctly, the benign aspect of buprenorphine over the respiratory depression is done away with if you use other drugs like benzodiazepines that can cause depression, correct?
You're right. Yeah. So you're largely safe with buprenorphine until you start throwing other things in with it, namely benzodiazepines and the Z drugs, the Ambien, you know, the short acting hypnotic drugs. And so, Yeah, you can get yourself in trouble if you combine them. And that's of course true with any opioid and benzodiazepines.
So okay, so we have these patients that are complicated, and they want to refer to you. Now, in particular, you might do many things with these patients. Tell me, in what kind of patients you'll say, I'm going to start this patient on buprenorphine so the primaries know how to educate upfront their patients on what's going to happen?
I'll often get these referrals, and I'll just shoot a couple questions back. You know, have you talked to the patient about this? And is this patient resistant to change? Do they have, you know, risk factors that put them, do they have other comorbidities that put them at risk factors, COPD, sleep apnea, and are they resistant to change? Because if you got a patient that's like, if you tell them, you know, hey, we should cut back on your opioids, and they say, oh yeah, we should, that sounds great, you know, then do that, that's fine. Okay. But that's not who we're talking about, right? This is the patient that's resistant to change. They're terrified of you taking away their opioids, and it's that patient you believe probably will never get off opioids in their life. They'll probably be on opioids the rest of their life, and that's the patient I see. And by the time they get to me, it's almost and I don't want to say a foregone conclusion that they're going to end up on buprenorphine, but it's usually understood. I try to, you know, those patients that aren't good candidates, I kind of try to, when I see those referrals come in, I'll just shoot back a couple questions and say, hey, where are we at? And usually by the time they get to me, you know, all these things are met. They're on high dose opioids. They're on, you know, other complicated medications. They're resistant to change. They have chronic pain. They're certainly physically dependent, maybe have an opioid use disorder. Okay. And they'll probably never get off opioids. So that's the patient. Like, let's just make the switch. It's just a no-brainer.
So before, I want to hear a little bit of what you do, but I want to backtrack a bit because you mentioned that this is a scary drug because to begin with, the micrograms to milligrams looks like two different universes of how you go about these drugs. But for practical purposes, would you say that by the time you're talking into milligrams and more complexity, those patients should be off the office of the primary and under your care? So primary shouldn't even worry about that and just learn the basics of the microgram realm?
Yeah, I think it's just what you're comfortable with. I think it's very reasonable to say, I'm not going to do this. And Dr. Abrams and Dr. Devine and Holly, they're all those people are here, let them do it. I think that's perfectly reasonable. If you want to do it, I'm happy to talk you through it. It's once you do a couple, it's not that complicated.
Okay.
And I honestly think the milligram dosing is easier than the microgram dosing. But that's because that's where I've got the most experience. But, you know, the milligram dosing is for those patients that are on 50 or more MMEs a day or also have an opioid use disorder. This is that high-dose opioid patient.
Okay. So in your practice, you get these patients who are complicated for because of the use of opioids, right, in whatever context. How many you are switching to buprenorphine in your care that you end up just moving towards that?
Yeah, I mean, this is why they get sent to me, and they're all filtered, right? So this is
okay.
most of them are going on buprenorphine, and most of them are happy. I would say we do have failures, but most patients, once you convince them to make the switch, and once they get through, the switch is always, you know, a couple days of it's a little rough and it's a little scary. But once they make the switch, they're largely very happy. Their pain is well controlled, the side effects are minimal, and everybody's happy.
And what happens then after longer term? Because one of the things that it was shocking to me when we did the podcast with Dr. Kaul about chronic pain is the majority of this patient, okay, where is the pain? It's just not natural that you have a pain all the time. Either you die from the condition that gives you the pain, it self-resolves. What happens? Because my worry is that then we are going to switch into a more benign thing, but we'll perpetuate this thing of the being on an opioid for practical purposes. What happens long term?
Yeah, and I think that's that patient, and you have to ask that question: is this a patient that is just, you know, destined to be on opioids for the rest of their life? And unfortunately, that's where harm reduction comes in. Okay, would I love this patient not to be on opioids? Yeah, I would. I think their life would be better, and I think that it would be better medicine. But in the interest of harm reduction, which is really, you know, a lot of what I do, it would be better to have them on buprenorphine than on oxycodone, because this patient's never going to stop, you know, never going to stop seeking opioids. And that's kind of the question you have to ask. Is this a patient who's ever going to get off opioids, or is this a patient that has, you know, chronic disc disease, and they have chronic radiculopathy and chronic pancreatitis and, you know, whatever. And they probably honestly have an opioid use disorder too. And so then it becomes harmful not to treat them with buprenorphine. And I don't want to say most, but a lot of these patients, a good majority of them, they all have physical dependence, and most of them have an opioid use disorder as well.
Okay. Well, because that makes me dig a little bit into your head of expertise on this and probably literature you came across. Many of these patients, I don't imagine them saying, okay, if I don't get my opioid, I'm going to go on the street and rob a supermarket and get money, etc., right? Maybe they are 80 or something like that. But what's the natural history if you don't move them on to something and you come to this agreement, right? And you'll stay on opioid, but I will give you the safer opioid. What tends to happen if you don't satisfy the patient this way, in these patients that will never come off the opioids?
Yeah, so I mean, they either stay on their agonist at their full agonist, oxycodone, at an unsafe dose, and their prescriber continues to feel really uncomfortable about it, but keeps doing it, and that happens a lot, right?
Yep.
We've all got those patients that just feel like we're never going to be out from under the burden of this prescription until they die. And that certainly happens. You can taper them to, you know, less than 50 micrograms and follow chronic CDC, you know, CDC chronic, you know, opioid prescribing guidelines and try to get them down to a safe level or try to get them off. Or, you know, you can say, let's just put you on a safer opioid, you know, buprenorphine. And that seems to be the, in my mind, you know, the better option. Because that patient that you know, best case scenario, the patient buys into a taper or buys into tapering off completely, but that frankly doesn't happen a lot. And so then you're stuck doing a hostile taper where you're forcing them, and nobody's happy in that. I mean, the doctor's miserable, the patient's miserable, and it's, yeah, I've been involved in those, and it's horrible, right? So
okay. Now, you are prescribing the buprenorphine to a patient. In your experience so far, how many of these patients, what percentage, you know, I'm not looking for an exact number, end up coming off opioids, goodbye, nice meeting you, or how many become your chronic patients and go back to the primary?
A majority of them become my patients prescribing the buprenorphine. If the primary care provider is okay with it, I'll certainly say, hey, here's the dose. You just prescribe this until something changes. And that's fine. But most of them become my patients. Most of them stay on buprenorphine.
Because this is a biased subset of patients that end up with you to begin with, the ones that are likely to come up.
Right.
Anything else you would like to add about?
Yeah. The X waiver is no longer required, so anybody can prescribe this. And so I'm available for questions if you want to learn. If you got a patient that you think is a good candidate, you're not sure, you don't know if you should refer them or if you should try it, I'm happy to talk through you with it. There'll be a slide at the end of this that just contact me, multiple ways to contact me. This is a Schedule 3 drug as opposed to a Schedule 2 drug, which is your oxycodone and fentanyl. And so you're stepping down a schedule. It's safer. There's a lot of reasons to do it, but I understand why people aren't. But, I mean, those are all, barriers that we can overcome. And so I think I can be part of – I can certainly take those referrals, but I can also help walk you, the provider, through this treatment. It's the future of – right now it's the future of pain control.
Is there any consult or – you're talking informally.
Yeah. So either way, you can do a referral. You can send me a message in Epic, and I can just take a look at the chart and look it over and get back to you on it. You can email me if you just have a general question. And you can, when you do an addiction medicine referral, you can refer to addiction medicine in Wilmer. If you refer to addiction medicine in St. Cloud, technically, but I'll go to Kurt Devine. In St. Cloud, it's complicated. You have to refer to coordinated care medicine, which is a terrible name, but that's where I work there. So,
right. Thank you so much, Scott. Always a pleasure.
Of course.